Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and I'm joined in the studios today by New Hanover County Manager Chris Coudray. Also with us today, Alan Fryer, a public policy analyst at the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center. And joining us by phone is Dr. Roy Cordato, Vice President of Research and a resident scholar at the John Locke Foundation. Welcome back, gentlemen. Good to have you here. We're talking today about tax reform at the state level. In a moment, we're going to explore the idea of business incentives. I just want to address an email. Lee from Wilmington writes, "Don't consumption taxes tend to reduce consumption?" Dr. Cordato, what would you say to that?
No. We already have a consumption tax. The consumption already is taxed, both through the income tax system and the sales tax system. So right now, if let's say you're paying 6% state income tax, well, that's 6% on all your consumption purchases because consumption is already made with after-tax dollars. Then you turn around and you pay a 4.5% state. I'm not including the local sales tax. 4.5% state sales tax on top of it, right? So you're that person who is paying at the 6% tax bracket is paying about 10.5% on consumption already. Under our plan, they would be paying 8.5%. So they would be paying actually less on consumption than they currently are in terms of percentage. Now the advantage of ours is like the Justice Center's proposal through they want to use the current sales tax to do it, but it doesn't discriminate between different kinds of consumption purchases. So, for example, it doesn't matter whether you spend the money on a service like a haircut or buy a new stereo with it or, by the way, buy something over the Internet through Amazon. And it eliminates the entire Amazon tax problem of how do you tax purchases from Internet purchases.
343-1138 is the number to call. You can send an email to talk@whqr.org or tweet us at hashtag HQRTalk. Alan, we hear a great deal of talk, particularly as part of Governor McCrory's agenda, about how North Carolina needs to become more customer-friendly, open for business. The implication is that the state isn't really doing a great job of encouraging businesses to locate here. But you don't agree with that notion.
Well, what I would say is I think it's a credit to Governor McCrory that he wants to make the state more competitive. I think he spent a lot of time talking about that last fall, and he certainly spent a lot of time talking about it now. His two sort of core approaches to doing that involve reforming the tax code, which we've been talking about, and then reforming education, the educational system, better aligning it to make sure that you're the educational system, K-12, community colleges, better aligned with each other and better aligned with the needs of businesses. And I think that that's definitely an approach that we share and we agree with. I think that the big concern that we have is that any approach to tax reform could well end up starving the state of the resources it needs in order to actually pursue upgrading the workforce, training the workforce, transforming the workforce in the way that the governor suggested. We do know from the folks who do firm location, site location decisions that North Carolina is actually considered to be pretty competitive already. Site Selection Magazine, which is hardly a left-wing publication. It's the magazine for professionals who help CEOs decide where to locate new plants. They've ranked North Carolina number one, the best place in the nation to do business, I think 9 out of the last 11 years. The 2 years we weren't number one, we were number two and number three, respectively. CEO Magazine, very similar rankings. Forbes Magazine, again, these are good, you know, pro-business publications. And they keep saying that North Carolina is one of the best and most competitive places to do business to begin with. So, and the reasons why they say this is that they say that North Carolina has great infrastructure and they have a solid workforce and, importantly, the educational system to train that workforce. So I am sensitive to the theoretical public finance literature that says that these are competitive, the current tax system is puts North Carolina at a competitive disadvantage for a number of different reasons. But we don't really seem to see that in terms of the site location decisions that are being made, or at least the reasons that the CEOs give. I guess the question is, do we take those CEOs at their word, or do we assume that they don't actually mean what they're saying? So I think that that's a good start.
Well, I think that leads right into the question of business incentives. And Chris Coudray, New Hanover County Manager, the county recently agreed to contribute to the pot for incentives for a local company. Can you tell us about that, about the incentives for Castle Branch and why the county decided that was a good move?
Castle Branch specifically, a business that has a proven track record in our community more than 10 years. The kinds of jobs that people talk about they want to see happen in our community, knowledge jobs, information technology jobs, jobs that any community would be proud to have. Our board made the right decision in recognizing a company that has invested here and has grown here is going to add 400 jobs to our community, is going to engage in building new infrastructure in the form of a building that could be upwards of $10 million, that it was appropriate to partner with the state, and the state offered incentives as well, to partner with the city of Wilmington and offer an incentive to Castle Branch to ensure that they made the decision when it comes time to expand. And whether we like it or not, there are other beautiful places in this country to live, and there was serious consideration about taking this expansion, 400 jobs, to the state of California. And our board made the decision that it was appropriate to invest in that. Every incentive package request has got to be evaluated on its own merits. And our board made the decision, and I recommended to them that they grant those incentives. It was the right thing to do with the information that was presented and the opportunity that was before us.
Dr. Roy Cordato, how does the John Locke Foundation view incentives, business incentive packages?
Targeted business incentive packages we have been against always. I mean, we again, it's part of this view that the tax system, especially, should not pick winners and losers. It should not favor some kinds of investments over others.
But what if it
on
works?
On the other hand, let me point out that with analysis of our tax plan, we just heard numbers 400 jobs created. Analysis of our tax plan done by the Suffolk University's Beacon Hill Institute estimates that in the first year, our plan would create 80,000 jobs for North Carolina. And over a five-year period, it would jack that up to about 89,000. So this would be a great incentive for job creation. To adopt the kind of plan that we're advocating.
Alan Fryer of the North Carolina Justice Center, do incentives compel businesses, in your opinion, to locate or expand in a state?
I think the Justice Center over the years has actually agreed with the John Locke Foundation on this particular issue, although there is some new research that is showing that in certain cases, some targeted incentives to the right type of firms and the right type of industries can, in fact, increase job growth and wage growth. Although, I mean, that needs to be caveated with a lot. The research does exist, but it is those findings need to be reaffirmed elsewhere. I think that the concerns that that Dr. Cordato expressed on this are highly relevant for this discussion.
And that leads us into film incentives, because that's a particular area. We know that state leaders from the coast are working hard in Raleigh now to convince their colleagues in Raleigh that film incentives are different from traditional business incentive packages. Chris, can you talk about that a little bit?
Look at the track record in the last 24 months, just in our community, and then consider the statewide impact. Film incentives are working. We had a $200 million film industry last year. We had record numbers of productions, and the film industry is ultimately a very nimble industry. It doesn't take a lot of infrastructure to create a film environment. It's a very portable, nimble business. And if we were not making film a priority, and apparently the evidence suggests that incentives are the best way to do that, if we weren't making that a priority in North Carolina, it is highly likely that our film industry would leave. And I think that's why you see leadership on both sides of the General Assembly advocating for and promoting the value of targeted strategic incentives, and film is one of those.
And this is one of the interesting things that we've heard from state leaders who generally are not fans of incentives. They say, we can't deny the fact that film incentives work, and they often point to Michigan, which is a state that has seen tremendous drop-off in film production activity since they cut their incentives drastically. Dr. Cordato, Alan Fryer, how do you respond to that? This is practical reality. We want to bring these production companies to the area. This is what makes them come. How can you argue with that?
Let me just point out, you always see the jobs created with the incentives. Okay? You never see the jobs that are lost because wealth and income is being transferred from other parts of the economy, the state's economy, to do that. So, look, if you spend a lot of money on some, or you give a lot of incentives to somebody, and they will respond to them. What you're not seeing is what's lost. It's a classic case of ignoring what economists call opportunity costs. Opportunity costs are things that aren't seen. They're the things that don't happen because something else does happen. And so, yes, you can always say, gee, we gave this industry money and they came here. We have a film industry in the state because of the incentives. But what you don't see is what's not happening because of wealth transfers from one group to another. And so to point to the benefits only and to ignore the economic reality that there are opportunity costs to these, it does not do the analysis justice at all.
Alan Fryer of the North Carolina Justice Center.
I think the point about opportunity cost is important. We recognize that incentives come from state scarce dollars, scarcer every year, and could be scarcer yet next year. So you want to get as big a bang as buck as possible. The research, I can't speak to the film incentive in particular in the case of Wilmington, but what I can do is talk about the research that we've done that that shows that when incentives have been targeted to those industries that have been supported by very specific biotechnology sector, life science sector, biomanufacturing sector, workforce training, and strategic planning initiatives that are typically run by public-private partnerships between the state, private entities, and community colleges, we actually see significant overperformance from local firms in those industries compared to those that did not receive the incentive. So for us, it speaks to the importance of public investments that actually can get a pretty good bang for the buck in terms of promoting economic growth.
And let's take another phone call. It looks like we have a caller. Hello, caller. Welcome to Coastline. And the caller is not there. Okay, we do have a few minutes left. If you would like to make a comment, ask a question, express a concern about how tax reform in the state, including incentive packages, could affect you, give us a call at 343-1138. You can also send us an email to talk@whqr.org or tweet us at #HQRTalk. And Alan Fryer of the North Carolina Justice Center wanted to revisit the earned income tax credit. First of all, can you explain what that is very simply and where it is now in terms of the General Assembly?
So we'll start with the federal earned income tax credit was created in the early 80s by President Reagan as an anti-poverty tool to reward work. It basically provides a refundable tax credit to work low-income families who don't make enough money to pay federal income tax, but they're working, so they pay the payroll taxes that support Social Security and Medicare. So the EITC was intended to cover those taxes that they wouldn't otherwise get offset. The state earned income tax credit was passed in 2008, I believe, and was intended to increase the benefit that a state worker could get from the federal EITC. And so it's been last year, the earned income tax credit, along with every other tax credit in loophole and deduction, was extended for 1 year. Originally, it was set to sunset last year, but they extended it for 1 year so that it could be discussed as part of this big overall comprehensive tax reform plan. But what we're seeing is that it's not being handled as part of the overall comprehensive tax reform plan. Instead, what we're seeing is that it's being handled on a piecemeal basis. Over the last 3 weeks, both the House and the Senate have passed, the General Assembly, the House and the Senate have passed measures that both cut the earned income tax credit benefit for this year, for 2013, and then allowed it to sunset at the end of this tax year. And so obviously we have a problem with that. We believe the Earned Income Tax Credit is important in promoting work. It's important in providing sufficient resources so that families, particularly those earning low-wage jobs, are able to feed their families. So we think there's an important moral perspective on this. And we do think it's good economics that providing providing additional consumption assistance to low-income families can help overall consumption of local businesses, which is obviously good for the overall economy.
And let's take a call. We have Jim from Wilmington on the line. Jim, welcome to Coastline. Jim, are you there? Okay. He's not there. Hello, caller, you're on the air. And we don't have him. Hello, Jim from Wilmington, you're on the air.
Yes, real quick, and I'll take the answer off the air. Question along the lines of, and I know they talked about with military, of expanding the railroad from Amtrak on down to transportation and bringing in the military, as well as if we're growing the area with drawing new business in with the tax reform, what kind of impact studies have they done with respect to maybe enhancing on the railroad side as they bring in business and it'll bring in families coming in, moving into the area? They stay in hotels and eat in the restaurants. And I'll take the answer off there, but I didn't know if they've looked at anything along lines with the railroad. Thank you.
Jim, are you talking about the railroad? That there's currently a bill to establish funding for a railroad that has been defunct for a number of years, many years. Is that the railroad line that you're talking about?
Well, I think maybe 2 weeks ago on NPR, they talked about the Fort Bragg and Camp Lejeune both were looking into getting the heavier vehicles off of the highway, and they were looking at having the railroad expanded from the Fayetteville area, like Raleigh, as well as Jacksonville in, and it just made me think that we could have a huge advantage with enhancing all the way through Amtrak into the area.
Okay. Chris Coudray of New Hanover County.
I do know there's interest in a bill out there to support funding, as you said, to reestablish the line from Wilmington to Weldon. At the end of the day, it's going to take a strong business case to make that argument. Passenger rail is part of that. Freight and cargo is important to that argument as well. So we'll see where it goes.
Thank you. And that wraps up this edition of Coastline. Our guests today on the show have been Alan Fryer, public policy analyst at the North Carolina Justice Center, Chris Coudray, New Hanover County Manager, and Dr. Roy Cordato, Vice President of Research at the John Locke Foundation. Thanks to all of you for joining us today. Join us next week for Coastline when we hold our first Reporters Roundtable. Coastline is produced by Asia Brown and Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Cleve Callison is the executive producer. Lindsay McGrath is our call screener. Asia Brown is our board operator. Dorothy Rankin is our technical coordinator. And John Mortara is our webmaster. Heartfelt thanks to all of you who called, emailed, and tweeted us today. We're always glad to have you join the conversation here on Coastline. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of our listeners and our guests, and not necessarily of WHQR Public Radio.